Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Italian DJ and producer Hyperton has become a viral superstar with his ingenious revamps of 90s classics, which combine nostalgic vocal samples with futuristic house grooves. Inspired by his cousin, the trance DJ Giuseppe Ottaviani, Hyperton has been producing EDM and trance since 2014. However, it was in 2022 that it became an Instagram reel sensation with his clever future rave reworks, earning the attention of the mastermind behind the genre, David Guetta. When he posted his electrifying rework of La Bouche's Be My Lover and received a million views in less than 24 hours, the next step was an official collaboration with the French DJ icon. Notably, David not only featured on the official single version of Be My Lover, but he has also become Hyperton's mentor. It is therefore not surprising that David commissioned a series of official remixes of his songs from Hyperton, including Baby Don't Hurt Me, featuring Anne-Marie and Koi Leray, On My Love with Zara Larsson, and alongside David Guetta himself, Casso's Prada. Anyone who listens to his work can agree with David Guetta. Hyperton has that certain something. Unlike many other producers, he doesn't just pitch the vocals of the original up or down and raps the whole affair in towering beats. Instead, he completely rethinks the chords. The result is songs that sound both familiar and nostalgic, and excitingly new and different. An irresistible mix that also works brilliantly in the live context. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Hyperton. Where are you in the world and how are you doing?
Hey guys. I'm in Italy right now, and I'm in my studio, and I was finishing a new track.
Oh, exciting. We'll have to wait to hear that. Where, how, and what does the stage name Hyperton, how was that chosen?
It was my father's name when he was young. He actually had a band, like that style from 70s, kind of chic, You know, that style. And it was his name in the band. So I was like, okay, let's carry on the family tradition.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think to yourself, okay, I want to follow this path? And how did that journey progress?
I think it was around 15 years old when I realized, okay, this is what I really want to try to do in my life. My cousin, he's a DJ and a producer too. And you know, when you arrive in that moment of your life that you open your eyes, you look around, you're like, okay, my cousin Giuseppe is doing this. His name is Giuseppe Tagliani. My cousin is doing this job. I was watching Instagram, YouTube, playing shows, making music. And I was like, okay, this is going to be my objective for the future. And from that moment, I started making music basically every day, all day, between studies and everything. And here we are. It worked.
Observing your cousin doing it on YouTube, on Instagram, and wanting to do it and practicing and creating to becoming professional and doing it yourself, are there any elements of it that surprised you that you didn't think would be part of the process?
I would say yes. Yes. Like, I knew that to start this job, you needed lots of dedication, lots of hours to put lots of hours into the work, but I didn't expect that much. And more than everything, social media. I thought socials were like more easy, but I understood that socials nowadays, at least, are really, really, really important for an artist.
And do you find that challenging?
I think that, I started getting attention thanks to social. So I started understanding that, okay, this is what I need to do. So yes, at the beginning was easier, but now when you're an artist, you have to work on your music and you have to do lots of other things, but you also need to think about social. So it's like doing two jobs at the same time.
I agree with you. And it also is about getting out of that mindset of, okay, this post got so many thousands or hundred thousands of posts, and this post only got like 10,000. Why is that? And what do I need to change? And it's just like, just post and let it go.
Exactly. That's the thing. Exactly. Never look at the numbers. Like, look at what's working. Don't worry too much if you post something is not working. But the things that are working, learn from that. Always learning, even from the things that are not working. Why it didn't went viral, you know, didn't went. But don't focus, I'll say, and worry too much about numbers.
So I was reading your bio, and you've also got a family tree of dentists, and you were studying dentistry as well. So dentistry is very different to music, although there's both science behind both of them. Did you complete your dentistry?
Yes. I got my degree in 2023, and last year I went to the university to pick up my degree. It was fun and hard at the same time, but music helped me in focusing in finishing the university as fast as I could. This was the deal. Like, I have to finish university well and fast, so I can dedicate my time to music.
And do you think that there's any overlap between creating music and being a dentist, or are they both completely separate from each other?
I think, like, there are some points that dentistry share with the music world. For example, the art. You need to be a little bit artistic when you're a dentist, because you're working not only, you know, you're not only picking up the drill and doing cavities, you're also working with the aesthetics of a smile. So you also have to be a little bit artistic in that sense.
Makes sense. So on one side, you're creating music, and on the other side, you're creating smiles.
Exactly. That's the thing in common, like always smiling at
yes.
the music.
Again, when reading your bio, there was and has been collaboration with David Guetta. How did that whole friendship, partnership, mentorship, how did that come to be?
This is always a fun story to tell. Everything started with Instagram, actually. Instagram. Like, I woke up one day and I see that David started following me. And then he sent me a DM. And from that moment, we started talking almost every day about music. I was sending, you know, lots of new stuff. He was testing the new stuff in Ushuaia. He was playing in Ushuaia and High Ibiza. And he was giving me lots of feedback. You know, technical feedback. And I was impressed because he was really dedicating lots of his time to me. And talking, till the moment we tried to do a collab together, and it worked pretty well, I think. Be my lover. It was nice.
Was there any point in time during those messagings of the DMs on Instagram where you were like, having the chats, and then all of a sudden it sunk in maybe 3-4 weeks or a couple of months, like, oh, I'm chatting with David Guetta?
Yeah, totally. But the I'll say that the passion for music was so, and he's so big, that I didn't started thinking too much of, you know, I'm speaking with David.
Yes.
He's one of the best DJ in the world. I was just like, okay, it's music. Let's do good music, and let's show to David that I'm good at doing what I'm doing.
And this is a concept that helps my brain. There's a societal thing in the world that if a person is an artist, if they the CEO, if they are in management, they're sort of separate and they can't be approached. And, you know, you need to be put on a mask in the way you interact with them. But for me, the picture I like to create, and lots of people laugh at me, is that everyone uses 2-ply toilet paper. There's no gold-plated toilet paper. If there was gold-plated, we'd have very sore backsides. So
exactly.
So the same way I speak to you, the same way I speak to Ellie, the same way I speak to the people who do my spinning class, everyone is the same. And a label should not differentiate or separate someone to make them seem more important.
I totally agree. Totally agree with this.
How do you create music?
Sometimes I start with a bass line. Sometimes I start with drums. Other times I just only spend days of listening to music from other artists or watching movies or playing video games so I can get inspired. And most of the time when I start the actual process of making music in front of my laptop, I always put on the background a clip of me playing or another artist that I like playing, or sometimes colors or movies in the background to stimulate even more the creativity process.
For the listener, we on Zoom and we on the video, I see guitars hanging. So do you play any instruments?
I play guitar, I play the piano, I play drums, a little bit of everything. I'm not a master of guitar and piano, but I play a little bit of all the instruments. And I started playing guitar it was my first instrument when I started doing music. I started with the guitar.
And that was when you were a kid or a teenager?
I was a kid. I was a kid, like 4 years old, 5 years old.
Are there guitars that are small enough for kids that age?
Yes, there are small guitars. It's super cute. Like, they're really small. It's super fun.
I've never seen one. I must look into that. Do you collaborate with others on every track or only on some tracks?
Last week, for example, I was in UK for a writing camp and I had the chance to collaborate with so many other good artists. And at the end of the day, I always, when I do my music, even if the music is a single, I always like to share my music with my circle, I'd say, of friends and producers, friends, so they can give me some feedback. So at the end of the day, it's not only, you know, it's not only me. You always take something from everyone.
Yes, we love the feedback. We love the critiques. If there's something that you disagree with them in their perception of the way they're hearing it, do you stick to your guns and say, okay, well, I feel it's this way, or do you take on everything?
I like to be the one that is really flexible. So when I'm doing a collab with another artist, I never stop the other and say, I don't like this. I always find a way to let the creativity flow and never be stopped. And then after that, you know, when I'm in my studio, the other artist is in his studio chatting, like, okay, maybe we should try this. What do you think? We should try another stuff. And at the end of the day, it always worked.
It took you very quick to learn how to become a DJ, correct? 47 days.
47 days.
It was a day and night that you were doing it, or did you sleep at all?
Almost day and night, almost day and night. Right after finishing university, I came home and started practicing every day, all day, my set for my debut show together with David. And yes, 47 days. I was feeling lots of pressure, but I worked a lot and I was well trained.
After those 47 days in that show, were you exhausted or were you even more motivated to keep grabbing for more?
I think it was probably one of the best feeling of my life, because I saw all the work done. And I saw that everything went smooth. So the day after, when I woke up, I was really, really proud of my work and also tired. You're right. Like, it was like opening a valve of stress, you know, in a good way. I was feeling relieved, like really, really good.
When you prepare for your set, do you take a lot of time to prepare? Do you have sort of a basis, or do you just go with the energy of the audience? How do you approach your set?
Depends a little bit of where I'm playing. If it's a festival or a club, If it's a club, I go more with the vibe, with the energy of the people. If it's a festival, I try to be really precise even with the timing, because at festival the times are really strict. You have 60 minutes and you cannot go longer or shorter. But for both, I kind of have of I call it a skeleton of my set. So I know that I'm starting with a certain vibe and certain tracks. Then in the middle, I know that I'm playing a little bit darker or a little bit lighter, depending on the venue. And then in the end, again, I have my four or five tracks that I know that must be there. But it's not something mandatory. Like, lots of the time I start, like, I end up improvising lots of the vibe that I'm playing. But yeah, I always have kind of a skeleton for my live shows.
And is it all your own music, or do you mix in your music with remixes of others?
I try to balance. Of course, I like to play a lot of my music, but at the end of the day, I think as a DJ, the good DJ is the one that make the crowd happy. So if you have some tracks, but you know that in that venue they might not work, I prefer not to play my stuff and play other artists' tracks, because I know that they are going to work for that type of crowd.
So referencing the crowd, it's very much being in your world, about feeling the energy of the audience. Is that something that comes easily to you, or are you still building onto that?
The first shows I remember, because I was more stressed, of course, it was harder. I was not that connect to the people, to the audience. I was more like in the back. But now I really, really feel what's going on in the room when I'm together with a crowd.
You've referenced the planning for it, but the difference. So if you're in a club, you're headlining your own event, you're at festivals. They're all sort of different types of events and venues. You put your same energy and effort in. What else is different to or for you at those three different types of shows?
For example, in club, I like more to build a journey for the people, because sets are longer. So you try to give a vibe to the audience that they will remember. It's not just playing, oh, I'm going to play one hit, I'm going to play another hit, then I play a clap track. I always like to think in section or blocks. Like, I'm going in block one, I'm more energetic. In block two of the set, I'm going to slow down a little bit to let people breathe and rest. And then on the third block of the set is where I'm starting again to be more energetic. And in the last block of the set, I always like to be really melodic and leave a smile on people's face when I finish.
As you were talking about that, I was thinking of the body and the skeleton and the legs and the torso. And as you were finishing, I was thinking, you know, at the end should be a smile. We were talking about the dentist and the overlap. And then you said exactly what I was thinking. So we are in sync.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
What is coming up over the next period of time? Tell us what's been released, what was inspiration for the new releases, and what can you tell us is coming up?
My last collaboration with David is called Together. And we are really proud of that track, because we really feel it. It's like what we really feel as musicians. And we get inspired from that track to do more. So you can expect more track on that vibe together with David. Yeah, I can tell that we're working a lot on a lot of.
Okay, so we'll have to wait and see. I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the song from one to whatever number, that whole experience. I'm unsure if you are or may not be aware, a massive uptick of physical around the world. Last year or 2 years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year, also in the UK, There's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. There needs to be a high number of exchanges every day for a product to be in this basket, and they monitor it for tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket and being monitored. The research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older people, in inverted commas. Then we have the various digital platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
At least in my opinion, I feel that nowadays people are looking a little bit for that nostalgia effect, I'd say. This is why reworking lots of old tracks on TikTok is doing really well. Also, you know, the new generation, I'm in the middle. Like, I know what is a cassette, I know what is a CD, I know what is a vinyl, but the new generation, they might not know what is a cassette or a vinyl. So at the end of the day, I think it's like fashion. It's a circle, you know, like you go through steps, but then because it's a circle, you will go back and you will discover like the old things will become fresh again. So I think this is my view, and also the quantity of music is crazy these days. There is a crazy amount of music being released. So I think for the new generation is a little bit more different to identify a hit, you know, one of those tracks, because everything goes so fast. But because of this circle that I really believe in, I know that things will go back in a way.
Now, you referenced social media earlier and you referenced TikTok. We know these days social media is very important in the music world, in the influence of getting streams and so forth. How do you feel social media has a positive effect on the industry, and how do you feel it has a potential negative impact on the industry?
This is a really good question, because I think that we can have both effect, because I can say that not everything that works on social media is going to work on the dance floor. And I can guarantee this. So sometimes the reality is a little bit distorted from what's really happening. For example, there is one crazy viral track on TikTok, but then you play it and the dance floor is not reacting. So there are these two scenarios. So I'll say that social media, of course, I really love social medias, because they give the opportunity to people to be exposed a lot. Like, you can be a DJ bedroom, like I was, and from day and night, you can be viral, and the algorithm will push you a lot. You can end up, like in my case, in the feed of famous artists. So it's easy, but the other side is that reality of music is a little bit more distorted in a way.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow or the next day, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorites. Again, top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once you finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs, what songs would you play?
David, because I'm so attached to David, of course. And Titanium. Then Avicii. Levels. Calvin Harris. Sweet Nothing.
That's with Florence, correct? From Florence and the Machine.
I'm not sure, but I think so. Four. Swedish House Mafia. Heavens Take You Home. It's pretty recent, but I'm so in love with that track, together with Connie Costance. Lovely track. And last one. I'd say, this is tough. I'd say Armin van Buuren, probably. Armin van Buuren. Yeah, this is what it feels like. Like those are the tracks that really, really inspire my musical journey.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
As a final message to the audience, I would like to say to all the young kids out there trying, be confident of yourself and work every day, and you will get in touch with the right people at the right time. Don't worry if it comes before or later, but it's going to come. So keep working, keep doing it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.